ציון צופיה.
Shalom and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from the deep desert of the Negev to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome to the Land of Israel Network, and shalom and welcome to a special show about Hanukkah that I'm recording right now in a ruin, a Byzantine ruin in the desert city of Shivta, which is about 45 minutes drive from Zde Boker, between Zde Boker and the border with the Sinai Desert. So one of the reasons I'm out here is because I wanted to vacation a little bit with my family. This is something that I do during Hanukkah, is that I vacation. I like to take my family out somewhere to Eretz Yisrael. And I looked for some solitary places, kind of quiet places in the desert. For example, going to Eilat is fabulous, but a lot of people go to Eilat over this holiday, this Hanukkah season. But we wanted to go someplace a little bit more quiet. This is what I like to do with the kids. I think it's really good for them in many ways. I think it's good for them to detach a little from the internet age and also to just feel the magic of the desert. What really is the magic of the desert? It's incredible quietness and solitariness. It's very much the opposite of kind of the world that we live in, which is fast and connected. It's disconnected. I still have some internet connectivity here, but definitely a weakened version of it. And the kids just walk in the desert, but also in this ruin, these ruins that I'm standing in right now, ruins of a giant Byzantine city. And the kids just walking around, sensing archaeology, sensing the past, is very important. That's another kind of disconnect from our modern cities, but a connection to an ancient time, a different time, which is awesome for Hanukkah, because Hanukkah is really about kind of plugging into a different story that is not the story that we have today, and somehow heroism of the past that was quite heroic, really quite heroic. And walking in this Byzantine city, now the Byzantines are basically Roman Christians who rule out of Constantinople, and between the years 300 and 600, this city flourished, and I'm telling you that I'm standing in the ruins of a gigantic city, which includes, by the way, three big churches, including one that's partially really standing there, and it's an incredible, huge thing. And around here is really nothing. And this is part of the spice route, and also part of the route coming from Sinai towards Asia, and from Egypt towards to Syria and to Asia and into the desert and into Persia and to the Persian Gulf, and all that was very important back then until the Arab conquest in about the year 637, and basically they cut off the connection between this place and the Byzantine Empire, and that was it, and it was over. And this place is just a massive city in the middle of the desert, and yet it's in complete and utter ruins, and there's barely nary a thing around here. And archaeologists are still digging out. As we speak, I see even in the distance the archaeologists working. The Byzantines take over for the Romans, and the Romans, they take over for the Greeks, and the Syrian Greeks is really the story of Hanukkah. And I wanted to make a few comments on the story of Hanukkah. First thing, lighting the Hanukkah candles together with the children, someplace quiet, is there's something very special about it. I like the idea of the presents and all the stuff that, the American Jewish tradition of kind of canceling out Christmas by giving Hanukkah presents. That's fine. That's all good. And my wife, she loves to decorate the Malka. She loves to decorate the house for Hanukkah. And it's got the dreidels and it's got the menorahs and it's got all the stuff. But there's also beyond the kind of fun part of Hanukkah, there's also a real story of heroism, of incredible proportion, and also of a situation that the nation of Israel was really down. Rabbi Beryl Wein, who if you haven't heard his history lectures, I highly recommend it. There's really three great historical English lectures series. I think there's Rabbi Berlwein is the original and wonderful stuff. And then there is Rabbi Przanski, who I played for you 2 weeks ago. And then our own Rabbi Mike Foyer with his new Jewish story. There's a jet flying overhead. Maybe you can hear it, by the way. And, you know, one of the things that Rabbi Berlwein talks about is that the Jewish people, the only time that they really are in danger of being swallowed up by a host culture is when they see that host culture as being superior. And that is not something that they felt towards the Persians, and it's not really what we feel towards the Arabs today as well, right? There's Arabs all around us, but somehow we don't see ourselves as really part of their world, even though, you know, I've stressed many times that it's important to feel Middle Eastern. But somehow we really aren't part of the Arab world. And in some ways, it's because, and I'm just being frank here, it's because we see their culture as being inferior to our culture. And so we're not as magnetized to it, but the Greek culture at the time was an incredible progressive culture. And in many ways, the Jewish people were just enamored by it. They were enamored by the poetry and the philosophy, the mathematics, and the physical pleasures and the physical lack of restraint that the Greek world gave rise to. And it was such a state of affairs that the Jewish people really were about to succumb totally to Hellenization, and the Hellenists were societally on top, okay? And much of the aristocracy, the elite, the cultural elite, became Hellenized. And it was at this moment that really all was lost. The Temple Mount, who the aristocracy and the Kohanim were kind of in charge of, became a Hellenist site. And all the cool people were doing Hellenism. And rose up this band of brothers who were cool enough and mighty enough and courageous enough to A, take on the armies of the Syrian Greeks, the Seleucids, and cleanse out their cultural dominance and instill Jewish sovereignty as an idea back into the controlling cultural paradigm. And the miracle is manifold, I think, and I'm trying to kind of describe it to you in many ways. First thing, it's just to be that cool, to be that attractive, to beat out the attractive culture of the Greeks, and then to beat them militarily, and then to bring back the idea of a sovereign Jewish state. And it's not a coincidence that the early Zionists looked at the Maccabees as their role models, because it was almost there was an element of that was like unimaginable. It looked so far, so deep, that it had gone the other way. You know, there is a basic connection between Purim, the story of Purim, which is earlier much earlier than the story of Hanukkah. And it's under the Persians, and the situation there was in some ways even more dire, because that was even not in the land of Israel, and the Jewish people, including the aristocracy, again kind of forfeited the Jewish idea and started becoming enamored and attracted and ate. That's the kind of metaphor of eating from the feast of the of Achashverosh, of Ahasuerus. They had succumbed to the reality of living in a foreign land, and that they were subjects of it, and that they had to adopt its cultural norms. But in many ways, that was more dangerous than the Hanukkah tale, because there they were. First, they were assimilating, and then after not everybody assimilating, then they were under the pain of a physical annihilation. So in some ways, the story of Purim is a greater miracle that they were able to overcome these two forces. But the story of Hanukkah was that of the return of Jewish sovereignty into Jewish hands, and the fight for the land of Israel, for the control of the land of Israel. I guess the underlying theme that really permeates both of those is both of those stories is assimilation. Is assimilation and battle. Both of those things. Assimilation cultural, right? Cultural separateness of the Jewish people while still being able to accept and not indulge certain smart things that came out from foreign cultures, if it's going to be the Romans or the Greeks later the Romans but the Greeks. It's the ability to still assimilate good knowledges, but at the same time to keep culturally apart, to keep maritally apart, familially, tribally apart. The victory of our culture as the dominant culture for us, for our people. That's true in both of those stories. And the other thing is prowess, military prowess. And the military prowess of the Maccabees is greater than the story of Hanukkah, the story of Purim. But still, though, there's an element there, which is you sometimes, as the old song says, sometimes you have to fight when you're a man, right? Kenny Rogers, famous story about the coward of the county, right? Sometimes you have to fight when you're a man. And that is what the Jewish people had to endure and to kind of show their mettle, both in cultural superiority and both in military prowess in both of those occasions. And we remember the miracle, and it was Rabbi Chaim Richman who told me one time a thought that kind of never left me about Hanukkah. He said, what's the miracle of Hanukkah? The miracle of Hanukkah is not the lamp of oil that lasted 7 days. The miracle of Hanukkah is that a family rose up and were courageous enough not just to fight the enemy, the foreigners, but also to fight the cultural assimilation within our land. They had to fight the Jewish elite. And that was not simple. That was not simple. And that's the miracle. So what about the miracle of the oil? Well, the miracle of the oil is a little bit more kind of a question mark. And in the Jerusalem Talmud, it's not written, but in the Babylonian Talmud, it is written. So what's the story about the oil? So I heard Rabbi Melamed once say, Rabbi Zalman Melamed, the elder of Beit El, he said something very profound. He said the real story of the miracle of the oil was that the miracle of the oil proved that God was with them. Because there were even rabbis at the time who were against the Maccabees and saw them just like they were against Mordechai in the Persian story. They thought that the Maccabees were endangering them. Why make a fight against the Greeks? They were never going to win. You're just going to endanger everybody, etc., that way of thinking. And there were many against the Maccabees. But when the Maccabees had the miracle of the oil, it was the signature, the hand of God, that it said to them, indeed, God is with you. God is with you, and this is a godly endeavor. So it was a kind of proof. So that's really the miracle of the oil is there to kind of give you a thumbs up, an approbation of God's hand in this story. So here I am right now, and I'm kind of pacing back and forth, literally within these Byzantine ruins. I'm really by myself. I look out in this large swath of ruins, and then behind it, long desert. And to my southwest, I could see towards the Sinai Desert, and I long for the day that the Sinai will be part of Israel again. I'm one of those people, one of those few people, who believes that the Sinai giveaway to Egypt was an incredibly mistaken piece of policy. The likes of which we are still suffering for the what's the word I'm looking for here? Where's a person to help me find the word I'm looking for when I need it right now here in this desert, in these Byzantine ruins? How do we call it? The what has come from the aftershocks, the results of which we're still feeling today. And that is the idea of land giveaway and a smaller, shrunken Israel, that somehow that is a good result. That is not a good result. The idea that we gave away land to Egypt, that we won almost thrice, 2.5 times really, in 56 and 67 and parts of 48 as well. And so we won in those wars, this landmass, in a big, robust, strong Israel is one that sends a signal to the world, which is that Israel is big. Israel's here to stay. And the minute that that land was given away, there was a new window that opened up, which is the diplomatic and other windows by which we can shrink Israel to the point of her destruction. And that was a big mistake. And I'm looking out at the Sinai Desert, and I look longingly to it, and I remember how my parents used to take me so often, twice a year, and to hang out in the desert Sinai. And maybe that's why I bring my kids out here to the Negev. By the way, if you look at the map, the Sinai is nothing but the Negev is nothing but the extension of the Sinai. It's really the same landmass. The map that we're so used to thinking about what the size of Israel is, it's a kind of an absurd map. If you look at there's no natural division between the Sinai and the Negev Desert. There's no natural division at all. It's really part and parcel of the same landmass. But let me get to another part of this very thing that I'm telling you about the Sinai, which is that the enemies of Israel today are searching for a way to destroy us yet again. And they will always continue to do that because that is their want. Okay, they are against, there's something called anti-Semitism. I don't like that word. I think it's just not a great word. It's become kind of hollow and not hallow, okay? And the reason I don't like that is because it's not clear about what the real issue is. The real underlying theme of anti-Semitism is that the Jewish people represent a certain kind of light in this world, and the enemies of Israel are either jealous of that light or want to put out that light. And recognize, as Hitler so eloquently said, that the Jewish people are the conscience of the world, and he wanted to rid the world of that light of God in this world. Okay, so the enemies of Israel have gone back to the drawing board after the colossal military failures of the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they've come to new conclusions. And the one that we are facing right now in this generation is the delegitimization campaign. Now, don't misunderstand. There are bullets and rockets right behind the initial front of delegitimization. What do I mean by that? I mean, you know, before the infantry goes into any field of battle, the artillery is what softens the target, right? So you bombard with artillery cannons for a few days, and then you send in the infantry to mop up what's left. And today's cannons are the delegitimization campaign. And it is absolutely imperative that we understand that's what we're facing. And the way, there's a few different ways how delegitimization works, but I want to talk about one today specifically because I want to get to the Airbnb case. And that is, one of the ways that delegitimization works is that it is an effort to divide amongst the Jewish people. If the military efforts against us were ones that wanted to destroy the Jewish people en masse and to wipe us out, well, it had the unfortunate, for the enemy, unfortunate reaction that it united all of us together. It just brought us together. These big wars or annihilation campaigns remind us that we're all Jews, no matter what we wear in our head or no matter what faith we have in our heart. In the end, they want to destroy us together, and it brings us together. Well, the enemies have realized that bringing us together is a unintended consequence of their warfare, and it causes them to lose. So they have embarked on a new effort, and that effort is to divide between the Jewish people. So here's what the enemy says. It says something like this. It says, I don't hate Jews. I only hate Israel. I'm only against Zionism in Israel. Oh, I'm not against Israel. I'm only against the settlements. I'm not against the settlements. I'm only against the settlers who are the extreme ones and the outposts. Okay, I can accept that there's Jews in settlement blocks, but I only want to see Israel to be its right size to the to the 1967 borders, et cetera, et cetera. These are all just efforts to try to divide amongst Jews. And what Jews make a giant mistake is that we accept these divisions and be like, oh, the goyim, they're gonna like us if we just accept that it's not, they're not against Israel, they're just against the settlements, etc. So the truth is that these are very, in my mind, see-through, but I see other people don't see that it's a see-through effort to divide amongst the Jews and to weaken us by really pinning ourselves against one another. And this at the beginning of this week, I wrote an article which Shemaka helped me edit and sent it in the middle of the kind of late night, sent it to The Forward, which is a newspaper that prints a lot of horrible anti-Chevron and anti-Jewish communities of Judea and Samaria articles. But at the same time, I thought that my message would get out there. And also, I guess that's where the conversation is happening. So I wanted to have that conversation about these specific issues. And I wrote that there's something a little bit funny about the Airbnb, the Airbnb delisting, and what I really want to call it, I want to call it deplatforming of the Jews of Judea and Samaria. If you didn't hear, then Airbnb announced the policy where it would get, where it would basically boycott the Jews of Judea and Samaria. And the Israeli government and Israeli Jewish organizations throughout the world all very rightfully said this is discrimination. It was pointed out how that their policies, this kind of policy of not wanting to support human suffering in an area is something that is not across the board, that this was very localized against Jews, against Israel, against the settlers, against the settlements. And it was pointed out how egregiously unjust this policy is. But what my article pointed out is, hey, Jewish organizations, AIPAC, federations, Birthright, it's cute that you're, it's nice, it's right that you're complaining against this policy. But let's be real, that's your policy. You Jewish organizations are the ones that don't come to Judea and Samaria, don't send your money to Judea and Samaria, and have basically created the policy of boycott against the quote-unquote West Bank yourselves. And so the Airbnbs of the world look at how the Jewish people are treating, and they're seeing that you are falling for these divisions, and they could press that button and legitimately look at you and say, "Hey, isn't that what you do?" So that is what I wrote, and it this article actually took off. A lot of people saw it. A lot of higher ups saw it. There was some kind of basic truth in that article, I think, that really touched people, which is like, hey, how, you know, we don't want people to divide between us and boycott against us. And when they do it, we see it, but we don't see that mirror is being held up to our face. And I think this article just held up a mirror. Just held up a mirror and said, hey, this is our policy, guys. Okay. And what's the recommendation? Well, I didn't write so much what the recommendation was. I said, of course, you know, let us stop boycotting ourselves. And the ultra-left wrote in all kinds of tweets and Facebook pages, writing articles saying, or writing comments saying, you see, now the right wing is using the Airbnb boycott to legitimize the settlements, which is fine. That's exactly the truth. But then other people wrote to me and said, Ishai, you know, it's really the other way, which is that what you're saying is that Airbnb has every right to boycott, and you're legitimizing them by showing them that that's actually the policy of the Jewish people, which both of those are correct. Both of those are correct. Both of those are correct. What's the answer, friends? The answer is actually quite simple, and I think it was the King of Denmark who taught it to us. During the Holocaust, when the Nazis asked for the King of Denmark to take out all the Danish Jews, to kind of extradite them for the Nazis, he basically put on a Jewish star and said, I'm with these Jews. We are all Jews. We all these Danish citizens are we're all Danes and we're all Jews today, so you're going to have to kill us all. And that kind of courageous unity is exactly what's needed. When the Europeans come out and say, we want to mark all of your packages coming out of Judea and Samaria, all of your parcels or products coming out of Judea and Samaria, we want to mark them West Bank. So the answer is, fine, do so. But just so you know, all of our products from Israel are now going to be marked West Bank. All right? We're all putting on the yellow star if that's what you want from us. That's one way of doing it. Another way, for example, for Airbnb, imagine if the state of Israel said, you know what, every single one of our listings, 22,000 listings, is actually West Bank. All right? That's the way we think of it. Or, hey, Airbnb, you want to split between us? You want to split between the Jews and of the West Bank and the rest of Israel? No problem. We're going to split between you and the rest of us in the sense that we're going to block Airbnb from being used in Israel. We don't need your kind here. Okay? We don't need the anti-Semites. We don't need the dividers. And we'll use Booking.com or whatever it is. We're just going to push back hard. So that is another way to do it. And another way to do it is for the Israeli government to announce a policy saying, listen, Judea and Samaria are Israeli territories. It's just that simple. These are territories of Israel. Okay? These are territories of Israel. And yeah, we haven't annexed them, but we're not rejecting them, and we're going to annex them one day, and we're working on it. And that's the truth. There's no difference between Judea and Samaria and the rest of the country. Maybe there's some legal differences, but those are because of technical problems, but we are working on it, and that's the direction. And hello, everybody. Here's the notice. This is what we're going to do. These are just some of the suggestions, but it's all very simple. We have to show unity. We have to not allow ourselves to be divided between these things. Not to mention that this is the ancestral homeland. This is the essential ancestral homeland, Judea and Samaria. And I want to kind of start closing off my talk with you today by just saying that Rav Soloveitchik says something that is of incredible importance, I think. He said, when you want to know what the mitzvah of the generation is, look to those Gentiles that want to stop you, that are fighting against you, and see what their focus is. Whatever their focus is probably the mitzvah of the generation. And he was talking about the land of Israel and building up the land of Israel. And I think that today, the focus of our haters, our detractors, is twofold. One, the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and the settlements, the Jewish nascent communities in these places. And the other one is delegitimization and the effort to besmirch and darken the light of Israel. That's because the counter of that is that we hold on to our land, live in our land, and be a light unto the nations. And that is exactly the effort that's being blocked today, or efforts that are to try to block us. As I stand in these Byzantine ruins, and Rabbi Beryl Wein has a great line where he says, if the people of the past would know who's selling tickets to whose ruins, right, they'd be surprised, in the sense that I'm standing in the ruins of Byzantium, okay, Byzantine ruins, and I am here in an Israeli a national park that is kind of selling tickets to see the Byzantine ruins. I think the Byzantines would have been very, very surprised, since they were kind of standing on the ruins of Israel back then. I am standing in these ruins. I am fully, fully confident that God Almighty is doing such great things, and He's bringing us back to our homeland, and He's bringing Israel to be a light unto the nations, and He's fulfilling His gigantic, ginormous, indescribably huge dream. But that doesn't mean that it's an easy escalator ride up to this moment. Quite the opposite. It's filled with many pitfalls and many challenges, and we still need to be Maccabees out there. We need to have that kind of complete courage, vision, the ability to, on the one hand, assimilate what we need to assimilate, and on the other hand, reject powerfully reject and revolt against people who want to curtail our sovereignty and our cultural autonomy. We have to have those abilities as well. It's tricky. It's tricky out there, and it's tricky. There are many moral questions. For example, the incredible building of Arabs all over the land of Israel is a moral dilemma. Should they be here? Should they have those rights to build? They have their 22 countries, and we have our Jewish state. And there's a element of hostile takeover in much of what they say, and in their many Arabs are succumbing to jihadist ideology. And if you just listen and read what they say, and it's everywhere. It's in comment sections. It's on their websites. There is a great hostility to Israel. So therefore, the population that is taking root here is stands against Israel, and we have to be aware of that, and you know, we have to deal with that. We have to accept that there's a big problem there, and so on and so forth. There are many, many stages and steps, and so all of us have to gird our loins for the next years, and we have to dedicate our lives to this battle and to be part of this battle for Israel. It is a battle out there, ladies and gentlemen, and the last few miles are the greatest battle of them all. So from these beautiful ruins here in the desert of Shifta, here in the Negev, I bid you blessings. I send you great blessings to be the Maccabee. Be the Maccabee, right? Be the Maccabee. Be the Maccabee. That's probably the name of the show. And I want to thank you. A lot of you have sent me emails recently. I have read them all. I have not read them out loud, but I have read them all. But it's been a little bit busy. I want you to know that I do read your emails and I appreciate them. So please fire off an email to yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I also want to thank the good folks in Hebron who hold on to the essential roots. That's where I work. That's my daily job. I wouldn't call it a job. I would call it shlichut, an emissary work, to work for the Jewish community of Hebron to defend our essential roots and kind of not a ruined city of Byzantium, but a living city of the Jewish people from 3,500 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and yet again today. So I want to thank you very much, folks of Hebron, and please visit hebronfund.org to visit us there. And I want to thank the True Blue Jew makers, Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T, for making the restoration of one aspect of the prophetic time, the great times that we're living in, the time of the resurrection of the Jewish people, and so to the resurrection of the True Blue Jew. So check it out at Tchelet.com. And I want to thank the Israel Bible for being a new Bible that you could really... It's not a new Bible. A new translation. A new translation. It's a new translation of a very old document, a very ancient document, filled with incredible truths, and especially with a focus on the land of Israel. So check it out at theIsraelBible.com, theIsraelBible.com. I also want to thank Tabitha, I want to thank Moshe, and I want to thank Ben Bresky for getting this show out. Thank you guys. You guys really make it possible. And I want to thank you for being the Maccabee. So be the Maccabee. Write me an email, hashtag be the Maccabee, right? And I send you blessings from this incredible desert and this place where Abraham walked, Haloch v'nasoha Negba, he walked back and forth in this Negev, and his footsteps are still felt here. And his footsteps, the Lech Lecha footsteps to the land of Israel, is calling all of us to be part of this great story. God bless you folks wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay connected, stay part of the story. Keep those Hanukkah candles lit, lit bright, lit strong. Don't let anything bring it down. We've waited 2,000 years to relight the real lights of Hanukkah in Jerusalem, and you are doing it wherever you are. You are part of that light, and there's many, many forces out there that want to extinguish that light. We are rekindling, we are kindling brighter and brighter and brighter, and nothing is going to stop this incredible light. God bless you folks wherever you are. Stay tuned, stay strong, and shalom.
Chanukah Sameach to all of our listeners. Let's keep our lights shining bright.
Happy Chanukah from the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Hi, this is Gil Hoffman, host of Inside Israel Today. Happy Hanukkah from Jerusalem.
The few over the many, righteous over wicked, the impure at the hands of the pure, weak over the strong, and right over wrong. We give thanks of our victory with gladness.